Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. Today, we're tackling a subject many may fear, but few fully understand: debt collection in the UAE banking sector, especially from the perspective of consumer protection. Let's face it, life does not always go according to plan. Jobs are lost, salaries are cut, businesses fail, or unexpected crises strike. For many, loans, whether home mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, or personal lines of credit, are among the first obligations to feel pressure when cash flow tightens. When the borrower begins a default, the relationship shifts. They're no longer just in arrears, they're under legal, regulatory, and reputational scrutiny. For the banking industry, recovering that debt is priority. For consumers, it can become a battle to preserve dignity, rights, and financial stability. That's why it is crucial for borrowers, and indeed all of us, to understand how the UAE banking sector handles defaults, how the central bank regulates debt collection, and what protections you as a consumer can have under the law. At the outset, one thing is clear. While debt collection is legal, harassment and intimidation are not. This is a balancing act. Law is your ally, not just a hammer. In today's episode, we'll unpack the regulatory framework governing consumer protection in banking, the specific rules for debt collection practices, both internal and via licensed agencies, real examples of unfair or illegal practices, and a clear summary of what's allowed, what's not, and how consumers can respond. So let's dive in first into the legal framework that governs debt collection. But before we do that, let me provide a little bit of a context. So what is, and it may be in simple terms, remind what debt collection is all about. So it's, you take a loan, let's make it a car loan. And that car loan is based on your ability to repay it. That's tied to your current job and salary. Now, you lose that job. You still have other obligations to pay your housing and other life expenses. So the car, perhaps, is one of the last obligations that you believe is important for you to continue, or you have means to even to service. So you're not able to pay for your car loan on a monthly basis. So the bank obviously wants and expects to receive a monthly payment for that car loan, and its whole kind of financial system, its own internal systems are based on anticipated repayment of all those facilities. So obviously when you're not repaying it, the banks, the red flags go out internally within the banking system, and they are feeling the pressure and need to figure out what's going on with you and when you're going to start repaying your obligation, or whether you're going to be able to repay to begin with. That's all obviously sort of very typical, it's predictable, it's reasonable to expect. And then when you fail to pay your financial obligations, that the other side will come start knocking on the door and asking, trying to get some answers. How it's done is something that is very important for us to now to discuss and understand it. And this is the very purpose of this discussion. That is because until recently, there wasn't really any robust regulations that we as legal practitioners and therefore also consumers could refer to in order to protect the way that they're being handled or the way their data is being handled by financial institutions in times of distress or financial difficulties. We need to acknowledge that the obligation remains. It's a contractual obligation, so that obligation by very purpose is still obviously has to be, it's exactly that. It's your obligation to repay eventually. Now, but how your inability to pay that obligations is being managed by the bank or whoever it is that it engages to help them try to get that obligation or that loan repaid is now very specifically and expressly governed by the UAE rulebook or the UAE regulations on consumer protection. And at a very high level, it is not what it used to be. In the past, and I am sure still today, many would attest that whenever they fall short or fall behind on repayment of any of their financial obligations, they start receiving phone calls, text messages, emails, maybe sometimes even knocks on the door, packages, and even maybe sometimes calls to the office. Just all in the context of trying to get that consumer to put pressure on them to repay their obligation. So those are kind of the practices that perhaps were a lot more common or are still a lot more common. And so therefore, a lot of those bank consumers who have found themselves in distress would have experienced something similar to that, and we can talk about specific examples a little later. But the point of today's discussion is to now share with the consumers and by virtue of also this discussion with the collection agencies or with the bank representatives that there are specific regulations in place now to govern debt collection practices in the UAE. Now let's start with the regulatory foundation. So there's a whole series of laws that govern debt collection in the UAE. And debt collection, obviously, it's legal. It has to be legal because if otherwise the economy would not work if people were not held responsible to pay for their obligations. So there are specific regulations as to how that's to be done. So the first law is the Federal Law Number 14 of 2018. That's the law that governs the central bank and the organization of financial institutions and activities. So think of it as kind of the main law, the umbrella law. And among its many different powers, it's sort of this particular specific law grants the Central Bank of the UAE authority to issue regulations and standards affecting licensed financial institutions. So that's the purpose of this law. And that's one of the legal authorities that are involved here. And then the consumer protection regulation that is in the central bank rule book are issued under this authority of specifically Article 121 of that same law. So in other words, you've got the main law that sets out the central bank and gives the central bank the authority to issue additional regulations and standards that would apply to financial institutions. And then on the back of that, the central bank has issued what's called the Consumer Protection Regulation, which was circular number 8 of 2020. So still quite a new law. So the main law is 2018. This is the Consumer Protection Regulations in 2020. But it was at the end of 2020, so it's less than 4 years old. And so these regulations central bank issued on the back of the authority or the law that allows them to issue these regulations. And in these regulations, it sets out the principles and obligations that licensed financial institutions must follow in their dealings with consumers. Now, licensed financial institutions are basically exactly that, all types of licensed financial institutions, meaning banks, other types of financial institutions, mortgage brokers, and insurance companies. Even so, anybody who holds a license for financial as a financial institution is subject to these regulations. And so in these consumer protection regulations, their objective is stated in many different sort of ways, but the main kind of the overarching objective is to protect consumers when they use financial products or services. That's one. Two, ensure fair businesses and market conduct. And three, promoting responsible financing. In other words, discouraging over-indebtedness. And then four, enforcing transparent disclosures. So these are kind of just the overarching objectives of the consumer protection regulations in the banking sector. So in other words, the consumer protection regulations outline banks' obligations towards consumers, from responsible lending to fair treatment and complaint handling. And so in these regulations are further supported by the, what's called the Consumer Protection Standards, which specify more concrete requirements. So again, now it's law number one is the one that sets out the central bank. Law number two is the consumer protection regulations that the central bank issues on the back of law number one. And law number three is the what's called the Consumer Protection Standards that are also issued on the back of the consumer protection regulations. And so these standards, by the way, although they're called standards, they are actually mandatory and enforceable in parallel with the regulations. And they cover areas such as disclosure and transparency, complaint handling, market conduct, data protection, and collection practices. And so they must be read together with the regulation and other relevant rules, including those on Sharia compliance where applicable. And these, by the way, regulations and the standards are included in what's called the UAE, the Central Bank Rule Book. And so that rule book is a fairly a very heavy paged document. I tried to print it, but it was like 2,000 pages. But the beauty of it is that it is available on the central bank's website. And it's in a very easily and accessible form. So it's in searchable format. And it's being updated all the time. So that's why instead of printing it and relying on kind of printed copy or looking for a book where it's been printed, you should always refer to the website itself, because the rules are being constantly updated. They're very easy to find, and specifics, even though there's 2,000 pages, the specific sections are easy to find. So, and there's specific sections on consumer protection and, for example, and then also debt collection. So that's why you'll hear me and you'll hear others sort of use these words interchangeably: consumer protection regulation, consumer protection standards, and the rule book. But all of them are kind of enveloped in this one umbrella document called the rule book. There's also, in addition to the standards and the regulations, there's what's called the market conduct and consumer protection rules, which reinforce that banks must deal with consumers fairly, transparently, and with due regard for their circumstances. So these are the rule books for the banks. And under the rule books, market conduct and consumer protection section, there's specifically articles between 2 and 15. It covers a whole range of essential consumer rights, institutional oversight, complaint resolution, financing practices, and enforcement. So it's pages, it's articles from 2 or sections, articles 2 to 15. So in short, the bank is, as a licensed financial institution, is legally required to conduct itself in a manner that respects consumer rights, especially when default happens. So this is quite big. We're talking about respecting consumer rights, even though that's when default happens. So this is a fairly significant concept if you think about it, because we're talking about the circumstances when the consumer is in default, i.e. the consumer has done something wrong, however you want to look at it, but ultimately is not able to service their obligation. So, but even in this context, these regulations are very clear that, especially in these contexts, the banks have to respect consumer rights. They have to act fairly and ethically with regards to consumers, even when consumers have done something wrong. And I have to tell you, just a digress for a second, from my experience as a lawyer, as a resident of the UAE for so many years, it's a huge development from where we used to be. Because in the past, whenever a consumer was not able to pay their obligations for one reason or another, and there's millions of reasons why somebody's circumstances might change all of a sudden and they're not able to pay or service their obligation anymore, banks would just treat them with give them no regard, no time. And so it was, and I just felt so frustrated back then as a lawyer especially, because with the banks, the argument would be like this: well, you signed, then you have to pay. So, you sign this check, well, you have to pay. Well, so this that was basically kind of the mind frame. You had the signature, it's your signature, then you have to pay. That was it. From a legal standpoint, it was very difficult for me to argue with someone who takes on that kind of attitude. But that is how things used to be not long ago. And that was just basically the consumer was treated as, because obviously they were in default, they were treated as the kind of the wrongdoer. And therefore, they were being placed on the defensive right away. And the banks would go on the offensive. And the consumer basically, unless you paid, you just couldn't do no right. So that's how things used to be. So now, as per this regulation, that we very, very different reality now, especially in those circumstances where the consumers find themselves in the stressful situation when they are not able to repay their obligations, the banks have very, very the banks and other financial institutions have very specific protocol and obligations in terms of how they can conduct themselves with consumers. So together, all these frameworks, as I mentioned, they establish a comprehensive set of rights for consumers and obligations for financial institutions, covering everything from product disclosure and complaint handling. Importantly, these regulations, collectively known as the Central Bank Rulebook, as I said, and they apply to all licensed banks and finance companies and debt collection agents operating under their authority. So this is, we will talk more about it shortly, but so these regulations apply to all financial institutions, including and specifically to the debt collection agents that might have been appointed by any of these financial institutions to try to help collect collect debt. And so obviously, as I mentioned earlier, the goal, and maybe not so obvious, but now the language of the regulations makes it very obvious that the goal of the regulations is fairly simple, is to ensure that the banks act fairly, transparently, and responsibly in all their dealings with consumers. So let's come from here. Let's kind of zoom in on the debt collection practices specifically. So the Central Bank Rulebook recognizes debt collection as a legitimate financial activity, but one that governs is governed by strict consumer protection requirements, much the same requirements that apply to all the financial institutions. And let me kind of maybe pause here for a second, because until recently, in fact, there were a lot of representatives that claimed that they were part of the debt collection companies and so they worked as debt collectors. But in fact, there wasn't a specific licensing activity that was called that, debt collection. So until recently, that actually all those so-called debt collectors were not actual licensed debt collectors. So therefore, as per these regulations, they would have been operating illegally. And so now the regulations here, these regulations recognize the debt collection obviously is a legitimate industry, it's a legitimate practice, but they are subject to very strict requirements and conditions, which are the same requirements as those that apply to kind of the original banks that would have originally issued a loan or a mortgage or whatever the financial obligation. So, and under the umbrella of the consumer protection regulation and standards, there is a dedicated provision that's for debt collection practice, and that's section 5.25 in the rule book. So this specific section, it sets out the framework that all banks and their agents must follow when attempting to recover overdue debts. So here are the key rules that banks must follow when collecting debts from consumers. So one, the banks must maintain written policies and procedures for collecting consumer debts. So it cannot just be sort of made up. There has to be documented and detailed debt collection protocols that are sort of codified within kind of the bank's own practices, and that they can refer to all of their agents. They would train their agents and ultimately and govern themselves based on those procedures. So internal procedures. Next, the banks must, to the extent reasonably possible, discuss financial difficulties with the consumers before moving to collection or legal proceedings, and they must also document these discussions. So this is quite important. So in other words, banks cannot, just because somebody defaulted on their repayment obligations, cannot just right away send collection agents. They have to reach out to the consumer. They have to understand what's going on and how they may be able to work out an alternative for the consumer to be able to repay. or restructure their obligations so they can continue to pay. And they are required to do this before either they hire a collection agent or before they decide to file a court case. And all of these discussions have to be documented as well. So for the consumer, for example, if all of a sudden you get served with a court case and you haven't had any of these preliminary discussions or documents sent your way, then that's something, an argument for you to keep in mind is that your bank has to basically be able to substantiate, document, or prove that they've tried to do this. And if there's no documents to prove it, that's an argument for the consumer to be able to rely on to show that the bank has breached their obligations. Also, as per the rule books, if an account is in arrears for 30 days after the due date, the bank must immediately communicate with the consumer or authorized representative to understand the reason and explore options for repayment. So dialogue, right? Discussion. If the account is in arrears more than beyond 60 days, then the bank must issue a formal written notice and include in this notice. And this is, by the way, important because I know a lot of banks have communicated with the clients and just say, okay, you have to pay such and such an amount. But in fact, the written notice that the banks are required now to submit to the consumers has very specific nature. So it has to include the date when basically the default began, and the number and the amount of missed payments has to be specifically stated. The interest or profit rate has to be specifically mentioned as well. The fees charged, and then also the request for the consumer. So the notice has to identify that the bank is requesting the consumer to engage to remedy their arrears, and also name and contact information of the bank's collection department or authorized agent. And also consequences of continued non-payment, such as legal proceedings, sale of collateral, or engaging guarantors. So in short, what it means is that the bank have to give you notice, right? And that notice has to be substantiated in writing. So it's not just a phone call from a bank representative saying, well, you've defaulted on your payment. You have to now, and because it's been in default X number of days or weeks overdue, then you have to pay such and such additional penalties and fees and interest. No, so each one of those has to be documented in writing, and the bank, and clearly, again, how it's practiced, or how it's used in practice, so it remains to be seen. I think this is fairly new regulations, and I expect for the banking practices to change and evolve along with these regulations, especially now that they're in place and they're hopefully well-known. Or will soon be well known, then the banks will start actually, whenever they write these written notices to customers, that they will specifically state, okay, this is the amount of the loan, this is the interest, this is the penalty, and this is the number of missed payments. And as basic as it may sound, that's not the practice that exists today. We still have clients now where they don't have that one document. They don't have a document that kind of summarizes. The bank will just say, yeah, you owe us X amount. But like, what is this X amount? What is it comprised of? Well, as per these regulations, it's no longer sufficient for the bank to say you owe X amount. There has to be a very specific table of all the breakdown table of all the payments, all the fines, all the penalties, all the interest rates, and so on and so forth. So the consumer can clearly see, so what is it that they're paying? So we have a case now, for example, where a similar issue is happening, where the consumer is being chased by the bank about repaying their mortgage or not mortgage, their loan from 2018, from a while back, and the consumer doesn't really know what's the actual amount because and why that amount is what it is, because they remember they took, let's say, 30,000 dirhams in 2018, and they've already paid 30,000, and they still have to pay 60,000 or 100,000. So, and they don't know why. So this is basically, that kind of practice is not legal. I mean, the banks do need to specify exactly what it is that the total amount that needs to be paid and what it's comprised of. Also, if the consumer's sort of the arrears persist, the bank must send a monthly updated notice of arrears, monthly, and include how you know how payments have been allocated among the interest, principal, fees, and updated balance. So it's not just kind of like here's one document, you know, one notice, and then we wait for you to come back and pay. So the banks have to be proactive, and they have to continuously send monthly updates that they sort of that. Include the relevant updates as of that month. Next, and this is quite important, so the communications must be proportionate and not excessive. So this is new. Something so specific and expressed was not previously in the financial regulations. So I think this is a very positive development, and the regulations make it very clear that banks, neither banks or sort of any of their representatives, can contact consumers to the point of where it could either this disproportionate or excessive or, you know, border on harassment. And they can only contact consumers on permissible methods, which include email, SMS, phone, and mail, but as long as they are officially registered with the bank. So the banks must not, and these are the must nots, the banks must not visit a consumer's home or workplace without their consent. They must not communicate outside of 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. time slots, and they must not make unreasonable and excessive contact attempts. So a quick example, but we will talk more later, but let's say if you get 5 or 7 calls from an agent or a series of agents, but all relating to the same loan, that would be an excessive per day, right? That'd be excessive contact. So that's something that now that hopefully you know, and you can, and you should, by the way, document that and keep track of all the different calls as a consumer, all the different calls that come in from the different phone numbers, because that would be an example of wrongdoing by the bank or the financial institution. Also, all communications, and this is in the context of debt collection, right, debt recovery. So all communications must be recorded and retained for 5 years after the debt is settled or written off. So this is important. So that means also that anytime the agent calls you, the collection agent calls you, that basically, or emails you, that has to be recorded. By these regulations, in accordance with the regulations, all of these communications must be recorded and must be on file. Whether that's happening, whether the agents themselves are recording, we don't know. But that's why, as a consumer, at least you should know this, so at least you can document it on your end. Also, if a bank use a third-party collection agent, it must inform the consumer in writing who that agent is, the authority that it granted, and the amount that they are authorized to collect. So what we've seen so far, we haven't seen that. We've seen that someone that starts contacting consumer and then they claim to be a collection agent, but there is not necessarily a document from the bank that would have followed this appointment to the consumer, notifying the consumer that the bank has retained the services of a third-party collection agent, and this is the name of the collection agency, and this is basically the person that will be responsible, and this is the amount for which we authorize them to contact you. So that is a requirement, and I bet in many cases today that is not happening, but the rules are very specific that, yes, it is legal to appoint a debt collection agent who is a third party to a financial institution, but they need to, the bank or the financial institution must first notify the client in writing, remember, because all the communications have to be recorded and stored. And so they have to notify in writing and notify the specific agency and the person and a specific amount. And, you know, this is basically kind of for most loans, except for residential loans, mortgages treated a little differently and subject to slightly additional requirements. Where there's also kind of warning of property repossession and legal proceedings, but it's, you know, mortgages are slightly kind of carved out from some of these regulations. So thus, in the banking sector, the debt collection process is not free rein. It's carefully circumscribed by regulation to protect consumers. Now, let's talk about the licensed debt collection agencies. So the rule book allows banks to appoint licensed third-party debt collection agencies, and that's a specific clause in 5.2.5.8 for those who are curious. But again, if you want to find out or if you want to be able to rely on these rules, just go on the central bank's website, right? So the rule book, and then you'll be able to just write, it's very easily searchable, right? Debt collection agencies, and these sections will come up quite easily. So as for the regulation, so all debt collection, third-party debt collection agencies must comply with the same legal standards, and they're subject to the same constraints and obligations as the banks and all the other financial institutions when dealing with customers. And by the way, so as of now, as our research shows that there are, at least we were able to find one licensed debt collection agency in the UAE that's actually licensed as a debt collection agency. So this one is based in Abu Dhabi, and that's a Speed Management Debt Collection, or SMDC. That's the one agency we found that actually has specific license, which by the way, until recently was not really a licensing activity that was available for companies, but obviously along with the regulations, the licensing activities, the corporate or companies law is also evolving. And so now there is, at least in Abu Dhabi, there is a licensing activity exactly for this very purpose. But it is has to be, so in other words, for a financial institution to appoint a third-party collection agent, that collection agency has to be properly licensed as such, not just some other kind of consultancy that holds itself out to be a collection agent. And that, by the way, how things used to be. And until recently, my position was that there were no licensed debt collection, properly licensed debt collection agencies. There was a lot of outfits and people and representatives who held themselves out to be collection agents, but they were not properly licensed. Well, now we know that that activity exists, and there is already at least one company that has the license for that. Some of the other agencies that we sort of have heard about, but have not had a chance to verify their licenses, is House of Debt Collection and A to Z Debt Collection companies. So they are coming up. But if you find yourself as a consumer, for example, contacted by what somebody who claims to be part of the collection agency, put the burden on them and have them provide proof to you that they are in fact a licensed debt collection agency, one, and also that they have been appointed by your financial institution to represent the institution in their debt recovery efforts. And that's, you know, because collection agencies ultimately act as agents of banks or other financial institutions, they must abide by the same bank's policies and regulations and constraints and limitations as all the other financial institutions. In other words, collection agencies don't have independent license to behave abusively. So you can impugn basically any of the actions of the debt collection to the financial institution and vice versa. So just because, for example, you are, let's say, if you're as a consumer, you are being abused or harassed by a collection agency, that's not to say that the financial institution and that's pursuing collection of their debt is not responsible. They're equally responsible because the agent is deemed to be, or the collection agent is deemed to be an agent of the principal being your financial institution. So the responsibility lies on both of them equally. So when the bank engages a third-party collection agency, the latter kind of steps into the shoes of the bank for collection-related functions, but with sort of the same legal constraints. As I mentioned earlier, but in a little more detail, when the bank wants to engage services of such an agency, there are the rule books, the specific provisions in the rule book specify what the bank must do before they do this. So, for example, the consumer must be informed in writing of the identity of the agency, the scope of their authority, and the amount it may collect. Then the agency is also bound by the same interaction rules. For example, the time limits between only 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., no unauthorized visits, no excessive calls, no disclosure to third parties beyond permitted channels. And also the consumer's data protection rights continue to apply. The bank remains responsible for ensuring that any agent adheres to data privacy and confidentiality rules. So in fact, there's a specific Article 6 on protection of consumer data and assets, which makes it very clear that all financial institutions and their agents have very strict obligations maintaining consumer privacy and confidentiality. They have to sort of inform consumers how their data is processed and limit disclosures to ensure security. Also, the agency, that is the debt collection agency, must maintain records of communications and calls and messages and notices, as I mentioned earlier. So they have to have that record, because otherwise that's just yet another breach, for example. So and just because it comes from different phone numbers does not mean that that's not supposed to be reflected in the records. All of those attempts to reach the customer about the same loan must be recorded in the records. And for the same retention period, which is 5 years. So consumer is effectively dealing with an extension of the bank. So complaints against the agency relate back to the bank's consumer protection or consumer complaint mechanism. And under a different article in the rule book, which is Article 8, that provides sort of the roadmap for consumers to file complaints if any of the financial institutions or agents are breaching these regulations. And this is important, the regulated entity, the bank that is, cannot evade liability by pointing to the agency. If the bank because the bank remains responsible for ensuring that its agents comply with the law. So this is by the way, is very important because we've seen in the past all these, I would call them rogue agents, reach out to consumers, and then when consumers complain to the banks, listen, I mean, these rogue agents are acting a little too aggressively and sort of harassing me, the bank basically disclaimed any kind of responsibility. Said, well, that's not us. These are not our employees. These are not our agents. That is not a legal argument. That's not enforceable because anytime somebody is acting on behalf of the bank, they're considered to be the agent, or the bank being the principal, and then therefore the acts of the agents are imputed to the principal as if they were their own. In other words, debt collection agencies are bound by the same obligations and banks, and they must respect data privacy under the Article 6 of the Consumer Protection Standards. They also must follow ethical conduct rules, and that's the word that is used more than once throughout the regulation. So all representatives of the financial institutions in their dealing with the consumers, they must abide by ethical rules or ethical sort of conduct rules, which means that the banks and must have their own ethical rules to be able to rely on and hold their agents accountable to. They also must maintain all records of communication and cannot mislead consumers about their authority, about the amount owned, or the legal consequences. So they have to be very specific. They have to be very precise in what it is that they're communicating to consumers about, in particular the amount of the loan, the kind of repayment terms and such. So if the agency oversteps, say by harassing a consumer or visiting their workplace without consent, disclosing debt to neighbors or making repeated calls outside permitted hours, the bank as the principal can be held accountable under the central bank's regulations in the same way. So if an agency violates these standards through harassment, misinformation, or breach of privacy, both the agency and the banks that are appointed may face the central bank sanctions. In other words, banks can outsource collection, but not their regulatory accountability. So now let me bring a few maybe examples of sort of the best way to contextualize it is to give you an example of a case that we're dealing with right now, where we have a consumer, and I mentioned it before. So we've got a consumer that has a sort of unpaid debt or kind of ongoing debt obligation since 2018. So the original debt was 30,000 dirhams. They've tried to pay here and there, and then it kind of they paid parts of it, then they had to take another loan to be able to cover the main loan. And anyway, so long story short, so now they've been they're being chased by a debt collection agent on behalf of their bank to repay this this obligation. And oh my goodness, I mean, I have to tell you, basically every provision that's sort of this rule book has been violated. Everything from the way that the original banking or the financial institution has conducted or not itself with a consumer, to how its agent, the debt collection company that is acting on behalf of the financial institution, all of it, you know, in the way they're treating the consumer, the way they speak to the consumer, each one of these provisions has been violated. So, for example, one is that the bank did not provide the consumer here with the letter, kind of early on, said, "Look, listen, this is your loan. Let's you know, cumulatively, this is your obligation. These are the different penalties. These are the different interests. These are this number of times that you've failed or were late to pay. And let's figure out a way to close this or to service your obligation. So what's the new plan that we can come up with?" So the bank never did that, right? So there's no sort of letter or set of letters and communications as is required by the regulations for the banks to have done before they actually go to the collection agent. So they haven't done that. They have not done any kind of debt counseling and worked with the consumer to identify a workable solution. By the way, and in this particular case, the consumer is a professional. You know, it has a steady income, has been consistently employed by a very reputable employer. So there is a way for the consumer to make it work with the bank, but the bank has just not negotiate, right, and will not really even explain why the loan that started out as 30,000 dirhams is now 200,000 dirhams. That's just another little nugget of information. So that's basically breach number one by the bank, if you just want to kind of simplify it. So they never communicated with the consumer the full sort of picture of like what the loan is and how it came up, the amount, their outstanding amount, how it came out to be what it is. Then they did not notify the consumer that they were going to appoint a third-party collection agent. So there should have been a letter specifically addressed to the consumer, notifying the consumer, listen, we have retained this entity to help us service your obligation, and this is the amount which they are authorized to collect from you. So there's no such letter. So that's breach number two. And now we've got this third-party collection agency that's contacting the client. And oh my goodness, I mean, just in that 1 month, I think there were almost like 60 or 70 calls coming to the consumer, from the agency, right? But now, what is the agency? So agency, obviously, it's a company, but it's the individual agents that call. So the agent called, I guess, perhaps it's easier to speak from the perspective of the consumer or the client. The client received calls from at least six different numbers, right? So there's some of these are UAE numbers, some of these are numbers from Africa, some of them are from other Gulf countries. So, so from the consumer standpoint, they're, I mean, being harassed, you know, and each one of these people with different numbers claim to be working for the collection agency on behalf of the financial institution. That's a form of harassment because it's just too many calls. It's excessive. It's disproportionate, which is it goes against specific provisions in the regulations. So that's just the number of calls. Then they start sending emails to the client's work number. Well, the work email. Well, the work email is not a registered email or not official email with the bank. So that's another violation. So the bank can write, because it's a personal matter, right? It's a personal loan. So it has nothing to do with the work. So the bank can write to the consumer's personal email address and call to the consumer's personal number, but not to their work email address or to work phone number or call the office to begin with. So that's, you know, that's obviously that's breach number, whatever, 4 or 5 now. And then the bank starts even more egregious. Then the bank starts threatening the client and just says, listen, you know, we will, if you don't do this, we will, you know, we will put you on a blacklist. You will not be able to travel. You will have an arrest warrant against you. And, you know, all of these are just threats. They're legal threats. They are threats, which additionally to everything else, they're also covered under the criminal law. So that's not just harassment, it's also threats. Then, as the saying goes, to add insult to injury, they go and they reach out to the employee's employer, so the client's employer. They wrote the senior management, they call the company, they email the HR department, and they email the senior management, and all about, you know, your employee is ruining your company's reputation, they're also disclosing to the company and other employees of the company, the client's personal information. They're disclosing who the client is, what the loan is, what their financial obligation is. That's all disclosure of highly sensitive and confidential information, which is additional to the central bank regulations and the criminal law. It's also subject to the cyber law, UE cyber law, and the data protection law. So, I mean, disclosure of somebody's personal information to a third party, unauthorized third party, and obviously the HR department at the company and the senior management of the company are unauthorized parties, because remember, this is a personal loan, so the company has nothing to do with this. And yet, almost every employee at the company knows about this person's loan. And it's because a number of these agents, all of whom collectively represent or hold themselves out as representing a collection agency, call from different call, send text messages, send emails to different numbers, and call consistently, and then follow up with, you know, on the same day with an email after email or a call or SMS and text messages. So, I mean, there's harassment, there's coercion, there is legal threats, there's disclosure of confidential information, there is breach of privacy, there is defamation. I mean, there's a whole slew of violations under the financial regulations, under the penal code, under the cyber law, and under data protection law. So that's just to kind of to contextualize how things perhaps, I'm sure many consumers who have found themselves in historical or in the past some kind of financial distress would attest to at least some of those tactics, or have witnessed or have been subject to some of those tactics. Well, now that's the point of this discussion today, is that this is the central bank has very specific regulations now governing all of those activities. And each one of those examples or sort of actions I've just described, they go directly against the rules and the laws in the central bank's rule book and the consumer protection, the standards and the rule book, and as well as I mentioned earlier, the data protection laws and the criminal laws. So the point of this discussion is to give consumers, but also, you know, I guess representatives of the financial institutions, information, because information is power, of what is legal, what is not legal. Because granted, these are fairly new regulations. They haven't really been, they had not existed before, and they haven't really been discussed very much. You know, I haven't really seen much of them being sort of profiled in the public. So maybe it hasn't really been brought to the attention of the right people. But by the way, the regulations also require that all of the financial institutions' representatives are trained in the regulations, and they're accountable, and they're well trained in how to in not just these regulations, but how to conduct responsible financial business practices. So in other words, it's all the financial institutions have to make sure that they hire the right kind of employees, that they train them correctly, that they give them the legal sort of training in terms of what they can and cannot do with the consumers, and that all of their third-party agents abide by the same regulations. So, Well, in summary, so what is legal, what is not? So what is legal or required, so as just to kind of just sum it up and repeat a little bit. So banks must have documented debt collection policies. They must communicate with consumers in arrears and understand reasons and offer assistance before aggressive measures. The notices must be issued timely with full disclosure of arrears details, consequences, and contact information. They must issue monthly statements to consumers showing allocation of new payments, balance, and accrued fees or interest. They must use the use of external agencies as well. It's allowed, but only after notifying the consumer and within specific constraints. Communications must be proportionate during permitted hours via approved channels. Data confidentiality and proper handling by any agent must be ensured. Retention of records of 5 years after the settlement or write-off. So, and now what is not legal or what is prohibited? So harassing calls outside of hours or excessive frequency, unauthorized visits to home or workplace, disclosing debt to third parties, neighbors or coworkers, failure to notify consumers of third-party agents and their rights, charging fees or imposing penalties not clearly disclosed in the contract and notice, failing to provide detailed statements on how payments are allocated, using consumer data for unauthorized purposes, refusing to consider consumer hardship or refusing dialogue before legal escalation, destroying or failing to maintain required records. So these are all the not to do. So in short, the law does not turn a consumer into a punching bag. The collection process must follow a regulated, fair, and transparent path. And in the event of the violations, so both the bank and the debt collection agency are subject to dispute resolution protocol, which for consumers, they have the option to file an internal complaint. First, they have to file an internal complaint with the bank. And by the way, every licensed bank must maintain a consumer complaints unit under Article 8 of the Market Conduct and Consumer Protection Rules. And the complaints can be submitted in writing or online. Then the bank must acknowledge the complaint, investigate, and respond within a prescribed time frame, which is typically 30 days. And all responses must be documented and transparent. If that's within the bank, right? Complaint is not properly handled, then it can be escalated. The consumer can escalate to the central bank's consumer protection department. So there is a consumer protection within a specific bank, and then there is the big boss that sits on top, which is a central bank. And within the central bank, there is a consumer protection department. So therefore, if consumers are unsatisfied with the bank's response, they can escalate it directly to the central bank consumer protection portal, and that's fairly easily found on the central bank's website. And then the central bank is supposed to, and that's by the way, it's called SANADAC. So it's supposed to investigate the breaches, and then it can, if it finds evidence of a breach, it can issue warnings, sanctions, and even financial penalties against the offending banks or agencies. So, and the process is fairly, the complaint process is free. It is confidential and is designed for consumers to use without lawyers, which, by the way, is huge. So this is why I'm making kind of references to where you can find this, the rule books, because it is all online. It's all available through the website. It's easily accessible, easily searchable. And just another example of that is that you can file and you don't need to have lawyers to help you file this complaint. There's also, depending on the transgressions by the agents, there's also an option to file a civil case for defamation, a breach, or a civil or criminal case for that matter. It's defamation, breach of confidentiality, or emotional distress, or any kind of financial loss caused by unlawful collection actions. And then you could, through the civil courts, you can seek compensation for any one of these violations. So that's on the civil side of things. And then also if a collection agents, for example, threatens you or threatens with violence, blackmails, or unlawfully discloses private information, then you also have remedies under the criminal law. And so because that any one of these actions could constitute a criminal offense. And then in that case, consumers can file a police complaint against a specific agent, which ultimately will lead to investigation and potential prosecution. And then obviously, you know, when if all that fails, and depending on the complexity and the gravity of the situation, you can always retain a lawyer to help you along. But the idea of this podcast is to give you the information, the ability, the tools to at least manage part of this process on your own, because the regulations are very helpful. They're in English. They're easy to read. You can cite the same regulations. You can send the links to the agents and to the banks just to kind of educate them of their breaches. So in conclusion, debt collection in the banking industry does not have to be a one-sided fight. The UAE's regulatory framework through the central bank's consumer protection regulation, the consumer protection standards, and the rule book's debt collection rules creates fairly robust guardrails to protect consumers even as banks pursue repayment. For consumers facing defaults, understanding these rights can make the difference between being overwhelmed and being overpowered. Monitor how your bank communicates with you. Insist on written notices and full disclosure, and don't accept a behavior that violates regulatory norms. If you believe your bank or its collection agent is overstepping, document everything, calls, times, and names, file internal complaints, escalate to the central bank if needed, and ultimately consult legal counsel if the dispute escalates. That's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website, which is lbylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.